You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Hello and welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and this week we are looking back at 2025, where we came from, what we've accomplished, and we'll get to where we're going. And before we do all of that, I'm going to share a deeply personal story about a very tragic accident that happened to me recently. I am ready to put 2025 to bed. I don't know about you guys, but I invited my son and our producer, Abe, to join us today. He's always here behind the scenes, and he's actually a blast. So I'm hoping that maybe he'll join us a little bit more often, actually on camera. Abe.
This is so much more work. Normally, I don't have to get dressed for these because I just cut my face out of all of so I'm just sitting back there watching the timer. It's a blast to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for doing all of this. All of this. It's very selfless of you. So do you remember what it was like a year ago when Donald Trump had just been elected and we were familiar with Project 2025? We knew that book was out there.
I remember were we in the Appleton Beer Factory? Was that the name of the brewery we were in?
Love that place.
For a while, but it, lovely, lovely place. Terrible mood. I don't want to. Not a lot of smiles in that place. And we didn't know how good we had it.
We didn't. And it has been a rough year.
This will not be the theme of the entire episode.
It will not.
There will be levity. We're not going to open up with tragedy on tragedy.
We are not. But I do want you to know that there is hope. And at the end of the episode, you're going to get to see a little clip from our friend who will be our guest next week, Skye Perryman, the president and CEO of Democracy Forward. When Donald Trump unleashed Project 2025, they were already ready with Democracy 2025, and they were there to meet the moment. So you'll get to hear more of that later in the show. But first, I wanted to share a real tragedy that happened the other day. I was driving. This is my accident story. I was driving down to an appointment, a can't miss thing, and the fog was terrible. This was the same day that there was like a 22-car pileup on I-43 where they actually had to go in and replace the pavement. It was bad, bad. And the fog prevented me from seeing a stop sign, but I did catch a glimmer of the semi that was coming toward me in the corner of my eye right before it hit me. And I was broadsided, and I'll never forget the sound of the crunch and spinning around and hitting the back of my car and spinning and stopping, and suddenly it was just silence. And I was incredibly lucky. I had the ability to call 911. I took a moment to look around and just take stock of what was going on. Was I okay? Fortunately, I was okay. I was stuck, but overall, I was all right. I was down by Random Lake, which is this very small town in central eastern Wisconsin. And before I knew it, they were there in the back door, the back passenger door, telling me it was going to be okay. They slid the hardboard underneath me and they put a collar around my neck and just pulled me out of the car easily and transported me to the hospital with such kindness and grace. And as we were going to the hospital, they were talking about what a challenge it was to work in this environment, how much they loved it, but how hard it was, and how only one of them was an employee, and the rest of them were all volunteers. And the fellow who was driving the ambulance, actually, it was his 70th birthday. He'd been volunteering for EMT for decades, he said. And he seemed so happy. Maybe he was happy because I was okay. Maybe he was happy because it was his birthday. Or maybe he was just an amazing human being because of the work that he does. But I am a doctor. I'm an OBGYN. I do this all the time. I'm always working in an environment in a rural area where we're trying to get EMTs to transport our patients to a higher level of care because we don't have all the services in our rural hospitals. And being on the other side of it is so eye-opening. So I'm okay. I had a little concussion. My ankle's broken, lots of bumps and bruises, but overall I'm okay. And I couldn't be more grateful to the EMT folks, to the folks who took care of me in the emergency department. And I had a spicy, fun nurse who was an advocate and amazing. And to everybody who has reached out on social media to share their support, to offer a meal, to tell their stories. Once you open up a story like this and you start to talk about your own experiences, it is such a doorway for others to do it as well. So thank you for taking care of me, because it's often my joy to be able to take care of you. I'm going to get tearful, Abe, because it's about community. It's all about building community. Really, that's how we take care of each other. That's the whole foundation of this show, is we build community and we talk to people who are doing the same thing, like those EMTs. And that was the beginning of the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I ran for Congress in the last cycle. And when that was over, we wanted to do something with the momentum and the energy that we had built. And we were offered the opportunity to do a show. And it was really local. It was all about the Green Bay, Appleton, like northeastern Wisconsin. So we brought in Mayor Eric Genrich to talk about what it's like to be the mayor of Green Bay, and Representative Ahmad Rivera Wagner. We brought in the Northern Door Activism Team, which is a group of incredible advocates up in the Door County area. People who started to gather and do things like book clubs and clothing sales and protests, and just to weave that fabric of community together. And I also brought in some local electeds like Tom Nelson, who's the Outagamie County Supervisor. This is one of my favorite conversations that we have. Do you remember this one, the Edmund Fitzgerald?
Absolutely. Every single year this comes back up. Somehow it's been gaining in cultural purchase like every year. It's, uh-huh. The Gen Z is obsessed with the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Really?
I don't know why. It's been 50 years.
Yeah.
And I can't say I don't know why. It's a great story.
That must have seemed like a total non sequitur, like Tom Nelson and then the Edmund Fitzgerald, because he wrote a book. Check it out. He wrote a book. It's called Wrecked. It is about the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald, which was a ship that sailed on the Great Lakes that took taconite from the Iron Range down to places, the industrial cities, where it could be used. It's steel. And Tom is the Outagamie County Supervisor, but he's also an incredible author. And man, he's excited about the Edmund Fitzgerald, because all of the things that led to the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald were also cultural problems, economic problems, failures of our system to take care of the workers who mined the iron, who transported the iron. So Abe, do me a favor, play that clip, would you?
Yeah, absolutely. And as I'm pulling this up, I'd like to really say what an incredible transition to go from a car crash to the book title. We really thought that one through.
Yeah.
Anyways, from the original conversation.
The iron ore ships on the Great Lakes were a fundamental, foundational component of American manufacturing and thus the American economy.
So what happened to the Edmund Fitzgerald?
Well, I'm not going to go too far into it because, as they say, you have to buy the book. But a lot of people who are interested in the topic are focused on the question, how did it sink? Mm-hmm. And so it set off from Superior that on her last voyage on November 9th, it was sunk around 7:15 p.m. November 10th, and it was about 20 miles away from Sault Ste. Marie. So that was the first stop along its way. In this case, it was going down to Detroit, and it was a ship that had been pushed beyond its limits. It was only supposed to carry about 20,000 tons of ore, and it was being pushed to about 26,000 tons. And so this was a ship that was one of the largest, and it just kept getting hammered, just, you know, more and more and more. They've tried to carry as much ore as possible, and it wasn't kept up. And there's a whole chapter that talks about how there was not just lax oversight on the part of the Coast Guard, but also the Bureau of Shipping, and they should have known. It was run down. They were doing patchwork on the hull. This ship should not have sailed in the first place.
It just really speaks to the failure of the systems that resulted in the deaths of these people. And the book is beautiful. Tom goes and talks to a bunch of the family members, and who haven't been talked to before, because everybody's so focused on the shipwreck, they forgot about the people. So this one really is about the people.
And it feels so pertinent now that we're seeing all these attacks on our structures and on our ability to check what the maintenance of everything is. It seems to really be telling a story of today as well as the story of 50 years ago.
Exactly. 50 years have passed and not a lot of changes. But you know, it has changed. Another one of my favorite episodes where we brought together three CEOs, John Brogan from the Bank of Kaukauna, Kurt Voss from Amerilux, and Sachin Shivram from the Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry. And we had a discussion about Trump's tariffs. And these guys have different perspectives. And this conversation was spicy. Hit it.
If you open the door, I guess there's kind of an interesting question in the relationship between tariffs and inflation. I'm curious about if the point of tariffs, at least in part, is onshoring of jobs and kind of driving more jobs, at least from my vantage point, one of the boards that I serve on is the State Economic Development Corporation Board. And I don't know, you know, up-to-date statistics, but like within the last couple of years, there were 300,000 open jobs for basically 75,000 people who actually in the workforce could go fill them. So I guess I'm curious if we really are trying to onshore these jobs and put more people in America kind of working in these great jobs, what are we going to do when we can't possibly fill them?
Well, we're going to have some sort of a comprehensive immigration system that makes sense, not one that just lets everybody in, including the bad guys.
So in the long term, I guess your view is like, yeah, we're gonna have to let these people in. We're just gonna have to do it in a different way.
Well, and I think in the near term, you know, from a supply and demand standpoint, that's gonna raise wages. And you know, Trump talks about trying to be the middle class president. That's part of his plan, and that's his ambition, to raise the wages of those folks, and also incent people who are now out of the workforce to get back into the workforce because now it makes financial sense for them to do so.
Well, look, I mean, I like to keep a conversation, you know, on the
narrow
on tariffs, and let me bring it back to that by saying that this is exactly case in point what John is raising, in that there isn't a plan. I mean, Kurt says, you know, that well, there will be comprehensive immigration reform, yada yada. What I would expect our president to say is, look, I have a policy to reshore American jobs, and here are the multi-prongs of that plan. One element is tariffs. One element is, you know, something, how he's going to drive economic growth. Another element is immigration. And all of that needs to work together to achieve my aim. I would expect him to do that, right? And we're dealing with the problems piecemeal, when obviously you need a comprehensive solution to all of that. And so again, you know, I'll just point out the rollout itself is just haphazard and self-destructive.
How often do you get to sit at a table with three CEOs and three CEOs with different perspectives to talk about something as controversial as tariffs? Great episode.
It was fantastic. Do you ever miss the old studio? We're going through all these clips of the old studio. The sunlight, we were right in downtown Green Bay.
Yeah. There's something about being in person too. Like, we can do some cool stuff when we're, you know, apart and doing and using Riverside and doing the Zoom kind of thing. But yeah, there's just something about all being together. It's a different kind of energy.
I also do miss Sachin.
I know.
Always had something insightful to say.
Yeah, I know.
Still so does. Many great... He's still with us. You know, I think Romeo Dobson. He's in a better place right now. He's still
all
with
right.
us.
All right. Abe and I are looking back at some of our favorite moments of 2025, including coming up next, conversations with four of the, I think it's nine people, running on the Democratic side for Wisconsin governor. So we'll have some fun with them when we come back. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. We are broadcast. We are podcast. We are streaming on YouTube, where we would love your comments. So like, subscribe, and let us know what you think.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm here with Abe Lierley, who happens to be my oldest son, also our producer, usually behind the scenes, and now he's here with us on camera. Hey, Abe.
Hello, hello. Glad to be here.
This is a great segment because we got to interview four of the, nine candidates who are running for governor in Wisconsin on the Democratic side of the ticket. And we ask them some fun questions. So you get to see a little bit of the lighter side. So Abe, do you want to go ahead and roll? Who do we have first? State Rep Francesca Hong, I think, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's hit it.
You have to convince somebody to move to Wisconsin using only three things: a place, a food, and an activity. I know, don't get hung up on the food because that's where your mind is going right now, but you also need a place and an activity. What would you choose?
Nasita, go to Cranberry Creek, Inc. and visit the cranberry bogs. And there is nothing like throwing the cranberries that are in the bogs up in the air. There is no feeling like it. It is pure joy. Food, it's got to be Friday fish fry, and it's got to be perch, and you have to have either an old-fashioned sour or a high life with it. And then what was the third one? I got so excited about cranberry.
A place of food and an activity.
Oh.
Although fish fry could be food or activity because...
That's true, but I would say even if you can't get in, you got to tailgate at Lambeau. There's going to be somebody who's going to offer you a bowl of chili. There's going to be folks who are just coming out with a whole like gourmet spread. You're going to see a whole like a lot of different like spreadable cheeses to, you know, so many different types of encased meats, from hot dogs to Polish sausage, yeah, to bratwurst. And so the tailgating part is in itself a really beautiful culture. And I think every single person's got a tailgate at Lambeau.
Now I'm super hungry. Thanks, Fran. Fran's a chef, so she just describes food so beautifully. For our next clip, we're going to go to State Senator Kelda Royes for her answer. Same question, her answer.
I'm going to say Lake Superior. I just think, you know, the fresh coast, the north coast, whatever you want to call it, it is, you're never more alive than after you've gone swimming in Lake Superior. And
by alive, you mean frozen, right?
Well, correct. I mean, the earliest I ever went swimming in Lake Superior was March. Have not done that since, but I do like to swim in the summer. And I really, you know, the cold does... I don't know. It makes you a better person.
It preserves you. That's for sure.
It does. I mean, and for food, I love dairy. I love old fashions. The cheese is amazing. Ice cream, obviously, but I'm going to have to go with maple syrup.
It's
a little bit of a thing for me, Kristen, because I have a really important bill, Truth in Maple Syrup, to make sure that if you ask for maple syrup with your pancakes, that the restaurant can't lie to you and give you corn syrup instead.
That's so disappointing when you order pancakes and they give you like, and you're like, no, I'm from Wisconsin. No, I need maple syrup.
I should have had an omelet. This is terrible. Right? So maple syrup for sure. And an activity, boy, I mean, I love biking. I love hiking. You know, there's so much great stuff to do in Wisconsin, outdoors. But I think I'm going to say protesting. And I say that because I think that one of the really special things about the state is we are politically engaged. And this isn't partisan, right? This isn't about, you know, your perspective or a policy issue. This is about the fact that we have really high voter turnout. The people in this state really care deeply about what happens here and what happens to our neighbors. And I think that is a wonderful quality.
She's so right. We have the second highest voter turnout in November of 2024. So I anticipate it's going to be the same for the midterms. Hey, Abe, why don't we take a peek at Lieutenant Governor Sara Rodriguez and see what she would do to convince people to move to Wisconsin?
I think, honestly, Milwaukee is a hidden jewel. It has so many different things that you can do. It's fantastic. A food has to be cheese curds because they're amazing and you got to dip them in something like ranch. They're really, really good. And then an activity, we have the Ice Age Trail in Wisconsin, and I love to go hiking and backpacking, and it is beautiful to be able to do all of this outdoor stuff in Wisconsin.
Everybody has to mention the cheese curds because it's so right. I think you might hear. Yeah, you might hear this from our last candidate as well, Missy Hughes. She's the former CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Hit it, Abe. What would Missy do to bring people to Wisconsin?
There's a little place in Sheboygan that makes bratwurst patties, and they're like $1.50 each, and you can get a beer with them, and they are so good. And I would, that would convince me to move to Wisconsin.
What about the activity? Or is that all in one thing?
Isn't eating the patty and drinking the beer the activity? Your activity could be watching the incredible surfers off the coast of Sheboygan in Lake Michigan there. It's a huge surfing community. But that is a tough question. And the first thing that came to mind for activity and food was a fish fry, a Friday night fish fry. I took my mom to a fish fry on the shores of the Mississippi, and she, like, for years afterwards was like, that is the best fish. And it's like, you know, this is an East Coast eat fish all the time type of person. She's like, that's the very best fish I've ever had in my life.
This was such a fun series of interviews to do, just to see them let down their hair a little bit. And then if you watch the whole thing or listen to the whole thing, which you can because they're all available where you get your podcasts, they talk about the things that they care about, what they bring to the role, and why you should vote for them. So check it out, because we've got a big election coming up this November. What do you think, Abe?
I mean, obviously the election's important, but they did all mention fish fry at one point.
they
you know what? It's a real cultural touchstone. What's the best one in the state?
I'm so hungry right now. I really love Redwood in Northeast Wisconsin. I know. Lots more to come, though. You know, we've got Mandela Barnes on the horizon in 2026, along with so much other good stuff. So in the meantime, come on back in a minute. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley, joined today by my number one son, Abe, who's usually behind the scenes doing all the producing stuff, but today he's actually like here talking.
Yep, glad to be here. I'm always here, but glad to be here in this capacity.
I'm so glad you're here in this capacity, because we talk about this kind of stuff at home all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's just neat to be doing this with you, because I know you care about so many of these issues. So
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to have an outlet, you know. The world's mm-hmm. pretty scary right now, but the antidote to, what was it? The antidote to anxiety is action.
Yes. It
feels like this is a good way to...
To act.
That's the word I'm looking for.
And, you know, we're looking back on 2025. It's been a rough year for a lot of different reasons. We're revisiting the origins of our show. We're talking about some of the crazy things that have happened and some of the amazing people that we've had the opportunity to talk with. And one of the things that has really just stuck with me is the amount of gun violence we have in our country. Obviously, it's constant. It keeps happening. And I mean, Abe, you were an infant. I was pregnant with you, actually, when Columbine happened. I remember listening to all of it going down right before I went into labor with you. And that's kind of how I judge when this whole school shooting epidemic started and how much we've failed for your entire lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Well, and these days, as a middle school teacher, you know, a good portion of the beginning of every school year is spent going over ALICE, which is the response training that we have, going over the drills with students and just seeing their reactions to it and noticing, admittedly, I've only been a teacher for 3 years, but seeing how it's become so much more normalized every mm-hmm. year. The kids just seem so much more comfortable with it. They've been doing it since they were in kindergarten. So
yeah.
It's become this grossly mundane part of American life.
Yeah, and sometimes it hits really close to home. Mm-hmm. Like in our episode that we called Thoughts and Prayers, which covered the Annunciation school shooting in Minneapolis. And it's close to home because one of our regular listeners and friends, her sister, her child was there. And in this episode, they talk about what it was like on that day when she dropped her baby off at school and literally, because they live a block away, literally heard the gunshots and went running back to the school understanding what was happening and how it all went down. Abe, would you go ahead and play that little clip from Laura and Patrick?
I don't know if you've ever had your spouse call you and tell you that there's actively a shooter at your kid's school, but it's just the most terrifying thing imaginable. I ran out of the office. Everybody was giving me funny looks as I was sprinting out of my, you know, corporate office, hearts pounding, and got in my car and drove as fast as I could. And I saw the SWAT team pass me as I was driving down the highway, you know, and I'm bawling my eyes out, listening to my wife make these decisions, which, you know, I don't know where the shooter is. I don't know where she is. All I know is that she's entering the school campus and entering the school as this is all transpiring. And I've never been more terrified. And the moment I was able to finally lay eyes on my son, my wife, there was a sense of relief, but also just, you know, a sense of horror.
That episode is incredible. If you listen to one other episode, please listen to that one, because it really, it hits home.
Yeah, it was hard to record, obviously, but it's difficult to listen to as well. There's a lot of emotions in that one.
Mm-hmm. But so important. And it's really, it was very satisfying for me to see Laura standing behind Governor Walz. This happened in Minnesota just last week as he signed a responsible gun ownership bill into law. So they have turned, like you said earlier, they have turned their despair and their experience into action. And it's, I'm just so proud of them and the work that they're doing. Yeah. Another person, another friend of the show who I am incredibly proud of and so excited always to talk to is Kristen Bry. She joined us for an episode that was kind of hodgepodge, a little bit of a mismatch. We talked about a lot of stuff, but one of my favorite parts of the conversation was when we talked about the New York Times article that was entitled, "Did Women Ruin the Workplace?" And we had a fantastic conversation about feminism. Go ahead and play that clip. Let's hear about Kristen's take on feminism.
The mental problem with women who have benefited from feminism, then turning around and criticizing what feminism has provided more women. And it's like, do either of you think you'd have your career in academia and writing if there were not people, but women before you who like paved the way to make this available? So like, that is like the whole thing with like my huge problem with any woman who is like peddling tradwife content. It's like being a content creator is a job. Like it is a job that actually requires a lot of work. And then like in turn, you can make a lot of money from it. So for you to be peddling this idea that women shouldn't be working, or like any woman who's on a Turning Points USA stage, who yes, like Candace Owens, who makes lots of money. And so it's like, that is like the mentality of like, I made it, you shouldn't, don't do what I say. Like, that's the stuff that drives me nuts. And so I think it's an interesting conversation, though, because I was like, what is conservative feminism? Do you know?
No. Well, maybe it's the hypocrisy of having benefited and then kicking out the ladder behind you and making other people follow in the beliefs that you are talking about, but clearly not living.
It's setting women up for failure to basically have them always be competing with men. In that, like, we're always just being judged as lesser men in the workplace, yes, in sports, instead of like actually recognizing that like men and women are different, and they're, but like, I see to that to me is an even more like radical idea beyond liberal feminism of like, oh, we need to change the structures. I feel like in the evolution of feminism, it's like we had to do like liberal feminism with laws and policy and politics. And like adhere to the man's world, like to a man's world and the world that men built. Cause like they weren't ready to just like tear it all down. But like the next iteration of that is actually creating a world that like works for everyone and identify, like recognizes people's differences, not just through genders, but also like through race and like mm-hmm. abilities and stuff like that. And it's like, but that like doesn't sound like traditional conservatism to me at all. So I'm like, so what do you guys want?
That was a conversation that could have gone on for a very, very long time. We just
you're not fans of Ross Douthat. Not a big fan. Like, I'm picking up on this.
We are not, but you know who I'm a fan of? Pat Kreitlow. And we had a great conversation about the future of local media. Let's run that clip.
Is there a sustainable future for local media? This is
Yes, because there were the town criers who were replaced by the pamphleteers, who were replaced by the newspapers, who were replaced by AM local news, who were replaced by TV. Then it went to, you know, websites and then newsletters and then blogs and now podcasts. And there will be things that we don't know. We have no idea what local communication is going to look like, you know, 10 years from now. But other people will be paying attention to what the next big thing could be. They will engage in it. And so there will always be something. It's just a matter of, you know, do you want to be a part of it to make sure that it's trustworthy and, you know, or at least do what you can to keep those people honest.
So true. And coming from somebody like Pat Kreitlow, former state senator, up north news journalist, yes, we need local media. We need local media now more than ever. So I was heartened by that conversation and all the whole rest of it.
Pat always manages to bring that, doesn't he?
He does.
He always manages to bring that heart to it, the that sort of don't give up spirit. There's a path forward.
It's the plaid shirt. It's the plaid shirt energy. Speaking of energy, another one of my favorite conversations was with Kate Duffy from Motherhood for Good. She admitted that back in the day, she was really not a voter. She was really not engaged, but then she started to care, and it was because she became a mom. Let's play that clip.
I started it because I didn't really used to pay much attention to politics all that much. But then I became a mom. I have two small kids. I have a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old. And they actually made me start paying attention more. I guess it makes sense. You know, you bring these mm-hmm. little people into the world and then you are suddenly noticing more about the politicians in charge and the decisions they're making and how that's impacting not only your family, but the schools and communities and the terrible news that we tend to see all too often becomes even scarier when you're a mom, when you're a parent, and you think about yourself or your own children in these situations. And so I just started to pay more attention. I was trying to find people online that I could relate to that wasn't just, like, of course I read the news and stuff like that, but I also was like looking for other voices that felt like I could sort of be in community with. So I decided to like just create an Instagram account and start talking to, making it for basically my friends or other moms I knew who, like, I knew they had the same values, and I knew because we had conversations about like when Roe was overturned or there was another school shooting, I knew how upset they were. But then they would also say like, oh, I don't do politics.
Oh, so, yes, but politics mm-hmm. are doing you. So yeah, you got to get involved.
That's one of my favorite things to say to people.
I've heard that one before. I've definitely heard that one before.
Kate, by the way, Kate and Kristen have a show on YouTube every Thursday night. It's called See You Next Thursday. And it's clever like that. I highly recommend that you tune in. But speaking of incredible women, I am thrilled that Dr. Laura Hanks, my dear friend and colleague, who does transgender care, she takes care of people who are transitioning, she appeared on a segment and talked about what it's like to take care of transgender folks and what it's like to be in that seat. So, Abe, Dr. Hanks, please.
I think something that's really important for everyone to understand, especially healthcare providers, may that be nurse practitioners, our medical assistants, our rooming patients, the front desk staff, that 25% of patients that identify as transgender or non-binary have had some sort of negative experience in the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. So that's 1 in 4 have mm-hmm. had someone that misgendered them, that made them feel less, they felt that they were touched inappropriately, any of that. Anytime I have a patient that identifies as transgender, non-binary, I think about that stat before I walk in the room, is that 1 in 4 of those patients have had a negative experience. So it's so important to go in, and not only that, like you said, like they're under attack mm-hmm. from the government being told that they're, you know, not real people. It's just, it's sick. So when I walk into the room, the first thing I say is that, hi, I'm Dr. Hanks. I use she, her pronouns. Can you tell me your name and pronouns? Or like usually they'll do that. And it's like, you can just see this like, you know, like just that moment of like, okay. And it's that first interaction is just so important. And I really drive that home with my learners, my medical students and residents. I'm like, this is what you will say. And this is how you're going to create an environment where we can have a good conversation and take care of our patients.
She is just brilliant and courageous and lovely.
A rare person.
There are so many more people like that, actually, Abe. And we are going to talk to many of them. That's the goal for 2026. And we've got some fantastic guests on the horizon. You're going to hear from one of them when we come back from this short break. So in the meantime, you are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lagerle Show. We are broadcast. We are podcast. We are streaming. We're everywhere. And we're about to be in even more places. Stay tuned and hear more.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lagerle Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lagerle, and my buddy here is Abe Lagerle. He's my oldest son, also our producer. He's usually behind the scenes, but today he's in front of the scenes. Hey, Abe.
Hi, glad to be here.
We've been counting down, not counting down, but just looking back at 2025, some of the incredible guests that we've had and just some of our favorite moments. It's just so neat to think about where we started and what we've built and who we've talked to and where we go from here. Aren't you excited for 2026?
Just get me out of
2025. Yeah, that's how I feel too.
This year can go right behind me. Second contender to 2020, you know? Just
yeah, I know.
It's 2028 can't be that far away.
Hey, but listen, so let's talk about our first guest of 2026, because we taped that show last night, and I'm really excited about some of the people who we already have lined up, but this one is kind of extra special, because when Donald Trump was reelected, we knew that Project 2025 was there, and we knew that that was the playbook. Well, so did our next guest. She understood. She had the huge organization of attorneys and folks who are doing the great work out in the public knew that this was coming, and they started planning and coming up with solutions and counters. And every time that the Trump administration does something, they are ready to counter it in one way or another. So Skye Perryman will be joining us for our first episode. That'll be next weekend. And she's the CEO and president of Democracy Forward. We've got a little clip to tease it. Abe, would you hit it?
Yeah, absolutely. not gonna spoil the whole episode, but some really good stuff coming up.
Yeah.
One of the strategies that we know that this administration's using, we've seen throughout history with autocratic actors using, is they want us to deny our common humanity. They want us to forget that we have more in common than we do have different, right? They want to play on people's differences. They want to engage in culture wars. Divide and conquer is an actual term that is used about, you know, seeking to consolidate power by dividing people. And one of the things we have to do, and I think this is what you're referring to in the court of public opinion, is to just insist that we are not going to lose our common humanity, and that we're going to tell our stories. We're going to tell our neighbors' stories. We're going to talk about what's happening, and we're going to do it in a way that the vast majority of humans can understand and relate to and understand that this is not one person's fight and this is not one community's fight. This is the fight for all of us. Starting in early 2024, we started looking at what would happen if Project 2025 became implemented at the federal level. We know what it looks like to people in communities. We've seen it at the state level. But what would happen if you had this nationwide threat? And we started working with organizations that had something to contribute to how we would save public education, how we would help people be able to access their healthcare, how we would help people to be able to access the ballot box. And that became the Democracy 2025, not Project 2025.
Right, I see, they go together like a puzzle.
And so we had grown it to about 200 and so organizations by inauguration last year. And then over the course of this year, and that's why I can confidently say
that as powerful institutions have stepped back, people have stepped forward. And we have seen so many organizations, from big national organizations to smaller grassroots organizations, step forward and say, I want to be part of the legal response to this administration. And I'm not going to sit on the sidelines. And it's been incredibly important, especially this year when so many large law firms have not been doing that pro-democracy work. But if you take all of the organizations that are members of Democracy 2025, and you take our state AGs, you have about 70% of all the cases that have been brought against the administration and over half the wins. So this has been an incredibly effective coalition where people are talking, they're working, we're making sure that folks that need to be represented can find lawyers, we're making sure that lawyers can find the experts that they need to help them. And we're also just supporting each other in doing this work at a very scary time, but at a time that we know that we'll be able to overcome if we all work together.
I am so inspired by that. She leads an organization that is responsible for over half the wins against the Trump administration. And now that we've got our feet underneath us, and you know, the justice system moves pretty slowly, but there are so many cases where they're involved and they're ready and they continue to build. And this is a great interview. So very excited to do that next week. And it's not just Sky. I think we're going to have more democracy defenders, like, I don't know, maybe Harry Dunn, the police officer who stood up after January 6th and spoke out and is now an incredible advocate for law enforcement for people all across the country. So Harry's going to join us. We've got more candidates and electeds. Mandela Barnes, I think, might be making an appearance. We've got folks from the new media ecosystem, including Aaron Parnas and Jess Craven. You've seen them on Instagram and on TikTok. Well, now you're going to see them here, because we're all connected to each other and we're all supporting democracy and trying to ensure that we have the information we need to make the decisions that we have to make so we can move forward. Oh, and did I mention healthcare leaders? Annie Andrews running for U.S. Senate against Lindsey Graham. She's a pediatrician, also my buddy. Annie is going to hang out with us in January. And one other huge thing, Abe, we got a Substack, don't we?
Yes, we do. We're getting it up and running.
Yeah. It's been kind of, you know, not lingering, hasn't been doing a lot, but we're going to have this amazing, brilliant Substack that you're going to want to be part of, and we're going to be collaborating, not just with the people that I mentioned earlier, but also with other organizations like Paging America from the Committee to Protect Healthcare, Civic Media, and others. 2026 is going to be so good.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a fun year.
It is.
Lots of excitement coming up. We've got the campaign season kicking off.
The midterms?
Midterms are coming right at us.
Mm-hmm. We're in Wisconsin?
It's never a dull day in Wisconsin during an election.
You know, the last three presidentials were decided by less than a point. I mean, people are excited. They're enthusiastic. We've got great voter turnout. So part of our mission is to make sure that you have the information that you need. So please let us know. Who do you want to see? Who should we get on the show? What kind of conversations do you want to have? That's what this is supposed to be about. This is for us. This is our conversation. And I'm so very grateful to you for tuning in, for being with us in 2025, and looking forward to doing this all with you again in 2026. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can always find it wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube at Dr. Kristen Lyerly. Don't forget to like, subscribe, ring the bell, and comment. You can also find me on nearly all the socials, so don't be surprised if you're doom scrolling and you bump into me. Many thanks to our wonderful producer, Abe, who's with us right now, technical advisor Nick Tierman, and graphic design by Nathaniel Gonzalez. And on behalf of the whole Dr. Kristen Lyerly team, take care of yourself. We'll see you next week.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.